If you use the internet on a daily basis, and chances are you do, you probably don't put much thought into cybersecurity. You know, your network connections, the pages you visit, the files you download. You should be thinking about these all the time. Welcome to And Security for All. Your host is Kim Hakem. We're here to help you understand, in general terms, how and why your cybersecurity should be kept in check. Now, here is Kim Hakem.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of And Security for All. I'm Kim Hakem, your host, and excited to be here this week. For anyone that tuned in last week, I'm really sorry about that. We had to cancel at the last minute. I was having major Wi-Fi issues. Our Wi-Fi in the neighborhood was down, so I have backup to backup from here on out. Hopefully that won't happen again. But I hope you all are going to have an amazing weekend. And wherever you are, I hope that you have nice weather and you can enjoy Memorial Day. And always remembering those who served our country and who have died for our country. Let's all remember them this weekend as we celebrate our holiday. So if any of you guys have been watching social media, you probably know that us, the people that are here in the Midwest, we are we're having some fun times with these cicadas. That's why I'm actually I have a different background. I'm usually in my office. I can't even go in my office because it is so loud, the cicadas right now. It's really crazy. The people, I'm in St. Louis, we're not having it as bad as the people in Tennessee and Illinois, but you could probably even still hear them in my background because they are so loud. It's about the storm today. We love when it rains because they go quiet and we get some peace. So who knows how long this is going to last, but we are not having fun in the Midwest. Of course, these cicadas, they don't hurt you, but they are just downright gross. So hopefully in the next few weeks, they'll be gone. We're crossing our fingers. So we at FutureCon, for those of you that don't know, I almost mention it every week. I'm the CEO of FutureCon Events. We put on cybersecurity conferences all over North America. And we had our event in Tampa yesterday, which was completely packed, which was awesome to see on a Thursday before a long weekend. But it was a great event. Our next event coming up, we're heading to Kansas City. Then we go to Montreal, Canada, and then we head to Orange County, and the list goes on and on. So if you want to catch us, all of our events run in a hybrid mode, so you can always tune into our events. You just have to go to FutureCon or like find me on LinkedIn, and I can help you out to get a virtual pass. But you can catch all of our shows in a virtual mode. But of course, we'd love to see you in person. So check out FutureCon.com, FutureConEvents.com. To see where we're coming next. So my guest today, I'm super excited to have her. I met her. We had our Philadelphia event. I guess it was maybe in April. When you do so many events, you can't even keep track. But she was our keynote speaker there, and she was an amazing keynote speaker. And always love when we have women leaders come and speak at our events because it's very few and far between. And today we're going to be talking about emotional intelligence and cybersecurity. I have Jessica Hoffman. She's the Deputy CISO and HIPAA Security Officer for the City of Philadelphia. Jessica, welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you.
Good to see you. You don't have your dark glasses on this time.
Yeah, that was just for show. That was very special to the FutureCon Philly. So it won't happen again. That was just for you, Kim. It was really fun.
We had a really good day. And, you know, it's so nice. Like so many of about 30 of these events a year, and so many of our keynotes, they're amazing and they're super technical, but this was a different kind of keynote that I think is so refreshing because it's something that, you know, talking about emotional intelligence and cybersecurity has so many different angles with it. But just to do a little fun fact, not fun fact, but a fun little game. I was watching a movie or a series the other day, and I probably should have pre-warned you on this, and you don't have to answer me now. You can think about it. And I'm going to actually ask my team on the show. They were like, if you could have one superpower, what would it be? And I was like, I thought about mine. And my superpower, everyone knows that I stay up late, I work late. And if I could have a superpower of just not sleeping and just still being energized and never needing sleep, that would be like the most amazing thing to me. And it's not even all about work. Sometimes it's like 11 o'clock at night and I've finished working and there's a good movie and I'm like, I really wish I could lay on my couch and watch this, but I really need to get some sleep. So sleep gets in the way all the time. So if you could have a superpower, what do you think? If you don't have the answer now, you can think about it through the show.
Yeah, I've heard this question before, so I'm ready.
Okay.
I would take a lot of different ones. Cloning is great. The invisibility cloak would be awesome too. But I think teleportation would be super awesome. So I could just like zip to the beach for like an hour and, you know, come back for my 1 o'clock. That would be super dope.
Cool.
Yeah. Just being able to get across country to go to a con or see family would be like amazing. You notice I said beach first, because if I could do that right now, I'd be like, I'm going to the beach, you know. Wouldn't even have to tell anybody. You could just teleport there and tell, wow, you have such a great tan, Jess. How'd you get that? So that would be my choice right there.
That's funny, because at the bottom of your bio, it does say, I love to be at the beach.
And I do that to see if people actually read it.
I did. I noticed it today. I was like, oh, she likes to be at the beach. I'm in the Midwest. I love to be at the beach. At least you're a little closer to me. I guess whether you go to the Jersey Shore, is that where the beach would be?
No comment. there's other beaches close by.
I have no idea. I am not an East Coaster. I just know my daughter lives out there and they were going to the Jersey Shore this weekend. So that's my reference of out there. But anyway, so it's interesting. I had one of my employees, she said that she wished she could read minds. I'm like, I don't want to read minds. I don't even care what people think or what they're thinking about me. Have no desire. Maybe a long time ago, you know, she's younger, so way younger than me. So maybe it's important. But I think as life goes on, you're like, you just start getting to a place where you really could care less what people think about you. So I'm like, no, I'll pass on that one. But let's talk about you a little bit and talk about, because your career is so interesting from where you started and where you are now. Like, first of all, it's always interesting to me how women even got into the tech side, much less the cybersecurity side, and now being an officer at, you know, the city of Philadelphia. Let's like way wind back and let us know like where you started and how you got into this industry, and tell us a little bit about your journey.
Sure, Kim, thank you. And yeah, I want to thank you again for the opportunity to keynote at FutureCon Philly. That was a lot of fun. I got to see some folks that I haven't seen in a while and meet some new connections. So really appreciate you giving me the opportunity. The stage was awesome. It was like, I feel like that was my pre-TED talk. So thank you. And thanks for having me back. I always like to share my journey with anybody who wants to listen. I'm very big on mentorship and paying it forward, because we see a gap with women in cybersecurity, period, not to mention at a leadership role or in a leadership role. I'm happy to say that since I started my career about 20 years ago in IT in general, I've seen a lot more women and, you know, within the field and women of color and even in cybersecurity. And I think that's an attestation to the fact that, or attest to the fact that we have great organizations, grassroots organizations like WESIS. You mentioned you're the chapter president for St. Louis. Women in cyber, women in tech, blacks in tech, blacks in cyber, black girls hack. I mean, it just goes on and on. So I love that about our community. You know, you see the need to diversify and really those opportunities are there. When I started back then, I was doing IT. I didn't even know anything about cyber. This was before you know, was really kind of like a hot commodity, so to speak, and organizations really didn't have that on their radar, kind of like Wild Wild West, I guess, when it comes to internet. So yeah, I got involved with cyber. It was a water cooler thing, you know. It was like, oh, anybody want to be an information system security officer? And I was like, sure. I was like 20 something, and I volunteered a lot. I still do, but I'm a little. I understand the purpose of no more, or let me get back to you. But it really did start like that. And I'm so glad I accepted that and leaned forward, because cybersecurity has absolutely changed my life. Starting out of the federal government, I was able to work in the CISO's office, which was the central unit for disseminating all security and privacy requirements for the agency I worked at, which was a large healthcare agency. So I really got to see from the ground up, almost from day one. I came in pretty early on, but I got to see how, from a federal agency, the security program mature. And it was a great time. And I'm like very proud to have been a part of that from a government perspective, public service perspective, because it does make a big difference, right? And we see that now, you know, there's no days off, there's no breaks, no chill when it comes to the adversaries. This is their job, right? They're coming at us. But I will say, you know, being in cyber has been a great, great adventure so far. And I, you know, continue to look forward to it. I had no idea I'd be in leadership necessarily. I only decided or discovered a couple years ago, like, that I wanted to go down the CISO path. And I wanted to do that because I felt that I was in a position to provide guidance on how to build and mature security programs, and being able to lead and influence and mentor the next generation of cybersecurity professionals. And I think I got a lot of that from being an auditor. So that's where I spent most of my career as an auditor, which is fun because then I get to go to all different organizations and tell them how crappy. No, I'm just like, I get to help them. I get to assist them with their programs and be a trusted advisor. And that's been so, so rewarding. And I really, really enjoy that aspect. And it is really a form of, you know, paying it forward too, and giving back, and being able to work through deficiencies and findings, and finding common ground, and not always being the no police as cyber professionals are used to being. So I know I kind of jumped all over the place, but as far as where I'm at now, being in the deputy CISO role, it's been great. I love working for Philly. There's a lot of initiatives going on with their new administration that are very, very exciting. Reminds me of when I worked under the Obama administration. It was just, you know, times to remember. And, you know, that's what we all, well, most of us maybe would strive for, right? We want to make a difference and impact. You know, have some sort of legacy that when we leave, you know, that we've left our organization in a better place.
So is it more stressful for you? I ran into someone, I was out at RSA, and I ran into somebody that works for one of the municipalities out in Phoenix. And I was like, hey, you want to come sit on my panel? I'm going to be out there. And it was right before the election. He's like, I don't know, you know, it's like too close. That's too close to the election. I don't know if I can, you know, be off site. So is it stressful for when you're working for the state, when it's, I didn't really get into the details of, well, why, you know, I mean, yeah, you kind of common sense know why, but is that more stressful? And what did you do for the Obama administration?
Sure. I think sometimes government employees get a bad rep as far as being unmotivated or lack urgency. And from my experience, that is not true. When I worked for the federal government, I worked for CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and we were at the forefront of the first rollout of Affordable Health Care Act. So that was extremely stressful for many, many reasons. If you're familiar, that was, you know, cutting edge as far as healthcare for all. We needed new applications, new policies, new everything. I mean, the Affordable Health Care Act itself was like, you know, 1,000 pages long or whatever, and included so much from the high tech to EHR, EMRs, you know, putting all the electronic or digitizing all healthcare records. I mean, it was a completely new way of looking at and handling healthcare when it comes to patients. So that was extremely stressful. But very rewarding. I'd say that was one of the highlights of my career, being able to be a part of that, because it literally touched everybody, for better or for worse, you can say. I think that if you're really engaged and dedicated and committed to the success of your program, it's going to be stressful. I've learned over the years, and you mentioned this kind of on our side chat, Kim, that you mentioned it about reading minds, right? I don't care to hear other people's thoughts necessarily, right? But I think when I was younger, I might have, right? So to that note, you know, things might have bothered me before, but I kind of look at it like, are you bleeding? Are you dying? How critical is this? But when we're talking about incidents and things like that, you know, every moment counts. So, you know, I don't want to diminish the importance of cybersecurity, especially when it comes to reacting and or even being proactive. But, you know, stressed, that's, I don't like to use that word. You know, things are challenging. We're working through it. We have good resources, you know, that we can leverage and comms and all that stuff. Anybody who cares about their job, I think experiences stress to that end.
Well, and it's interesting. I've been a CEO for, you know, this is my second company for 25 plus years. So I've learned a ton, you know, from the beginning until now. And emotional intelligence is really important. You know, like, I have a great team. Did I always have a great team? No. You know, was it through learning, you know, by mistakes that I'm where I am now? So let's kind of like dive into that a little bit, because I'm not even certain there's so many different aspects of emotional intelligence in general. Then you throw cybersecurity in there. Then you throw everything that happened, you know, during COVID, and we're still not, you know, post COVID, you know, the world is different than it was before COVID. So, you know, where, when you were giving your talk, I think you had like numbered different like type numbers of emotional intelligence, but where do you want to begin? Let's break some of it down, because I think it's such, there's no way you can even finish even in your hour that you had when you were keynoting. You know, you were flying through some of the topics, because it's how do you build a good team? I think let's start with that.
Sure. And you're absolutely right. Like, emotional intelligence as it in itself is so vast. Like, I met a gentleman actually at the FutureCon who had like several other aspects to include there, right? But essentially, if you're not familiar with emotional intelligence, definition, the capacity to recognize, understand, and manage our own emotions, to empathize effectively with the emotions of others. So this topic came to me last fall. I was given a where I was on a panel, and one of the participants brought up how her being emotionally aware, her emotional intelligence being highly effective there, has helped her with her business. And I was like, I never heard that term really, and had it used in that context. So I did some research, and I was like, wow, this is really interesting. And I thought, I have been operating in this way for quite some time, and it's cool to actually put some terminology to it. So the five main points of emotional intelligence that you will hear, and there are many, are self-awareness one, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. So the point of, you know, being a highly emotionally intelligent person is that you're aware of yourself and you're aware of your environment, the circumstances. So I continue to actually read more on it. Daniel Goleman is the godfather. I mentioned this in Philly, of emotional intelligence, came out with the book in the 1990s called EI, Why It Matters More Than IQ. and basically saying that people with high emotional intelligence may not have high IQs, but they are somewhat more successful because they can understand themselves and how they react to situations. And along with having that empathy to understand why people do what they do, right? So instead of getting upset and, you know, complaining or, you know, getting emotionally, caught up in your own feelings, you have some empathy or at least some awareness and understand why people do the way they, you know, do the things they do, feel the way they feel. And that requires you to be open to understanding and from an emotional intelligence perspective, understanding what it is that they're going through and going as far as understanding who they are as a person. So when I was doing my research, I was looking into how that impacts or how that can directly correlate to cybersecurity career. So this podcast is about cybersecurity for all, right? But any IT related, any tech related, any leadership related, you know, we're going to have situations where we're going to have to go through those tough conversations, right? We're going to have to deliver bad news, make difficult decisions, deal with difficult situations and challenges and even difficult people, or not even just difficult people, but people who are not in our time zone, from our culture, different genders, different pronouns. I mean, we have so much diversity in our world right now that I think probably ever before, right? Between being able to connect, hop, skip, and a jump in a plane, the internet, obviously, the rise of telecommunications. There's no barriers anymore as far as, working and communicating with a diverse group of people. So that's where emotional intelligence really comes in a nutshell. And for me, you know, being able to communicate effectively, be able to assimilate, empathize or understand, and motivate, right? Being able to motivate people to get the work done. And in order to motivate people, you got to understand them, right? What makes them tick. So I'm not super techy. I don't pretend to be, you know, we got people for that. Trust my team, have that safe space with the team so we can have that communication. But I don't have to be super techy, right? I got people that can handle that and we can have those conversations. But what I say, you're only as good as your weakest link. So it's really important that that communication is open. And that's where emotional intelligence really can help leadership. Because if you are self-aware of how you react to situations, self-aware of how your team reacts to situations, you can regulate your own feelings. Because, you know, I'm not saying you could regulate anybody else, but regulate your own feelings, like taking a beat. Maybe you shouldn't answer that email right away, right? Maybe you shouldn't say anything right now. Being able to empathize with your team and then the social skills, balling that all together to be able to have effective communication is and collaboration will ensure more success when you have incidents where there's a heightened set of urgency or heightened situation, or when you're dealing with new leadership or new priorities that you have to pivot, right? Be agile. Anytime there's a change, really, that can severely spike certain people as far as their anxiety. So, you know, it's really understanding things like that. And I think emotional intelligence in general can be a great tool and asset in leadership, but all around for everybody when dealing with certain situations.
So in the cybersecurity industry, I mean, I meet a ton of CISOs, and usually most of the CISOs I meet are really awesome. So maybe the CISOs I don't meet are the ones that don't come and keynote at my event, and the ones I just don't know. You know, I like to think that most of them are awesome, but, you know, nothing's perfect. You know, there's always bad apples out there. So have you seen, like, obviously we're not going to talk about anybody, but have you seen the difference of a leader having the emotional intelligence and another leader that maybe just thinks about himself and just, or him, her, they, whatever, where there's a different dynamic on the team than somebody that is aware of, you know, being able to empathize with your team. And like right now you're saying you're not super techie, and a lot of CISOs may be super techie. So therefore maybe they don't feel like they need to rely on their team. Like I totally, there are things that I cannot do that my team can do, and I trust them, and it's great to have them doing that. I know I need them for that. So do you get where I'm coming from? Like, do you see a difference from, you know, can you tell if you hear some horror stories? Like you asked a question during the event. You said, raise your hand if you have a bad boss or if you don't like your boss. Well, no one was going to do that. It's the events being streamed, you know. I think maybe there was a little bit of Tina. I was sitting in the back of the room. So I saw probably some things you didn't see. But I was like, that's a bummer if you don't like your boss. That's a bummer if you don't like your team. So how do you fix that? And have you seen those situations in your career? And maybe you were even on a team that was like that. How did you arrive at this and become, you know, emotionally intelligent?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I opened with the question, how many of you have experienced, a manager that was not emotionally aware? And there was people, you know, like you said, a little edge in raising the hands. And then I asked too, how many people in the room were the reason why good people left because they were a manager who had no intelligence and emotional intelligence. And a couple of people did raise their hand. And I was like, thank you for being honest, right? But that's like some toxicity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we work so hard and spend so much time at work and sacrifice so much. You know, I'm not going to necessarily advise anybody, but I will say that, you know, I think we all have the choice. You know, you can choose to stay in an environment where you're working with somebody who maybe they are emotionally intelligent, but they don't care. They understand what they're doing and they have no empathy for you. And that's just who they are. And so, you know, that's up to you as far as choice, whether you stay or not. Personally, I think life's too short, you know, go somewhere where you're celebrated, not tolerated. But certainly I've heard a lot of stories about this. And again, some people just don't know. And that's why a lot of people after my keynote came up to me like, wow, you know, this was a great conversation, because I don't think that a lot of leadership folks in leadership really have been having these discussions. You know, there's always like team buildings or, you know, discussions on how to be an effective leader when it comes to like project managing and, you know, even maybe giving, you know, autonomy to some degree and how to report up strategies and statistics and things like that. But, you know, really stepping back and like, how can we cultivate a workspace where everybody's opinion is genuinely counted and they feel that it's been counted? We have some empathy when it comes to families or, you know, work from home or, you know, thinking out the box, because it's not a one size fits all when it comes to how we're working these days. Right. And especially when it comes from tech. I mean, I could be anywhere in the world as long as it's approved, but working, you know, on a project. So there's really no limitations with the way that we have with the internet, you know, again, connectivity. We're connected. So everything's connected these days. So, you know, we have some folks that are still thinking more along the lines of, you know, for it's everybody in the office, I need to see you for productivity or print out everything. Or it's just that the times are changing. And if we as managers, as leaders, you know, there needs to be some consideration for individuals' situations, because you could still have a fantastic person on your team, but maybe they need a little extra assistance and whatever that is, or empathy for whatever their situations are. So I think that, you know, when we talk about leadership and maybe how highly emotional intelligent they are or aren't, you know, my first reaction is like, let's talk about it, right? Because people don't know what they don't know. And then the next reaction is, you know, maybe that's just how they operate, and we have to respect that. And that's when individuals who work for them need to make the decision, is this where I want to be?
Well, it's interesting, because when we you know, prior when we were in COVID, obviously all of our events went virtual. And then when we came out of COVID, we kept them virtual because people were still hesitant, you know, to come out into large groups. But then as time went on, we figured, well, we have to keep them in a hybrid mode because, first of all, IT people, there are so many IT people that, especially, I mean, I've been in the industry for a long time, so I would like to say especially the younger generation, but there's still people that, you know, are not in the, you know, 20s that are still very introverted, and it's intimidating for them to come out to a conference and be social. It's overwhelming for them. So they love that we give them an opportunity to give their CPE credits and they can watch our events and still see great speakers. And, you know, some other people just can't even get out of the office because it's understaffed. And, you know, we get, like every event, we have probably 200 people watching virtually, you know, with another, you know, 150, 200 people on site. But what it's just interesting to me because I don't think you can, even though I'm like, you guys need to come out here, come to our live events. It's really fun. But what's fun for me and what's fun for you is not fun for that person that is way more comfortable with just watching the event on their computer. And that's what's going to work for them. And I think that's what, you know, as I've evolved in my life, you know, even with having kids, you know, you have to understand that every person's different, you know, and that's, I think that is a lot of emotional intelligence is you can't, you know, reshape who someone is, but you need, they can still be an amazing employee, but, you know, within what makes them comfortable. And I think that's what, you know, I've seen is just that, you know, maybe bosses want you to be a certain way and they're just not that way. And if you can, you know, comply with the way that they are, you're going to have a great employee. And so I think, I don't know. I mean, how does a person even, you know, I guess it's listening to these types of conversations that are going to change, you know, the perspective of what your team should look like.
Yeah, I agree. And it'd be cool to have some workshops. You know, there are some available through Daniel Goldman, his website. Like I said, he's the godfather of, I call him the godfather of EI. I mean, even going back to that, like, yeah, EI and IQ, right? You can have some of your team might function at a very high IQ level and maybe a lower EQ, and that's fine, right? And that's where it's your role as a leader to identify what that person where they will excel, right? Well, what their skills, you know, can be emphasized and heightened and what value they can bring to the team. So, you know, typically, right?
Sorry about that. My computer died and I booted it back up. Sorry, go ahead.
It's just really interesting when you start looking at things through that lens and like kind of step back. And I wish I would have been more aware of this when I was starting my career, although I'm not sure it would have mattered because I was totally different as far as being like gung-ho and volunteering for everything. And my emotions probably were a bit more higher because I always wanted to be, do a good job. I wanted to, you know, impress my leadership, my team, and make sure that the clients and, you know, the project folks and everybody around me was satisfied. Not saying I don't feel that now, but like I said before, I kind of give it a little, I step back and, you know, think about it for a second. How is this impacting the overall mission? You know, who's involved? You know, maybe we need to rearrange some folks or some tasks or whatever. I don't know. Just looking at it more comprehensively and at a calmer approach, I can say, because, you know, when we're talking about, again, cybersecurity and being emotionally intelligent, high emotion intelligence, that means that you don't jump into a situation freaking out, right? Because it's very easy. A lot of times we have false positives for incidents. And if you're going to jump in and like, and that's any company, right? There's usually more, hopefully more false positives than actual incidents. And if you're going to jump into, especially as a leader, you're going to jump in every time and freak out and you're like, you know, your energy level is like, you know, extremely high and you're concerned and, you know, it's not going to do well for your team. You know, your energy is infectious, right? If you come into a situation calm and cool, and analyzing, discussing, looking at it from every angle, your team's going to do the same. Just like if you come into a meeting room as a leader, all grumpy and, you know, pointing fingers and, yelling or whatever, your staff is not going to be receptive, right? They're going to be intimidated. They're not going to want to talk to you. They're not going to blossom as they should, right? Because they feel like they're being attacked. So, you know, these aren't new things, really. I don't think they're new things, but I think that this is new in that, or it's being resurfaced in that people are talking about how, you know, the energy of your leadership directly impacts your team. People are talking about how important it is to understand where your team is coming from as far as their diversities, their differences. And again, this isn't just about gender or even sex these days. It's about cultural differences, religious differences, location differences, right? Just understanding backgrounds too, coming from private, coming from public, being usually working from home versus in the office, you know, being in rural areas like St. Louis versus on the East Coast where I'm at, and everybody talks really fast and just keeps going. And, you know, Nashville, we talk for the first 10 minutes about the weather and, you know, and just understanding regional matters too when we're talking about diversity. And I think the empathy is really big too, right? Being empathetic. And I read somewhere that women are more considered more empathetic than men. You know, I don't necessarily agree, or I'm not, you know, stamping my approval there, but I thought it was an interesting read because, you know, when you think about women being caretakers, you know, typically nurturers, which not every woman is, or not every female is, I'm not going to say that, but I thought it was an interesting read. And to that end, they're better. Women are more involved with GRC, governance, risk, and compliance, because we're able to ask questions and draw things out better. But I did think that there was some relevance on some level for that, because as a female, you know, I do feel that women are more in tune sometimes with emotional intelligence, maybe because we are caregivers by nature. And again, please, nobody attack me. I'm not saying that men are not, okay? Or, you know, whatever your pronoun is, I'm not saying that you're not. But I thought it was an interesting evaluation of, you know, when we're talking about emotional intelligence, how some people have it and some people need to work at it. But all in all, it's a continuous cycle, right? We're continuously working on our self-awareness. I know I am. You know, I might say something and I'm like, okay, Jessica, that might not have been the best approach, or that might have not been the best thing to say or best way to handle that situation. So constantly being aware of our actions is number one. And that's huge. That's really, really big and difficult for some people. And then being able to regulate, you know, make a change, that's even harder, right? And motivating other people, that can be challenging. Maybe that's just not your forte, and that's fine too. Being empathetic, not even empathetic, but just sympathetic. If you can't directly relate, be sympathetic. You know, you don't know what anybody's going through, or you don't know what people are going through, basically. And then the social skills, which are really critical when we're talking about leadership, being able to effectively communicate in a board situation, when you're asking for more additional resources, when you're communicating an incident, when you're hiring, you know, looking to expand your org chart and you're looking to hire more folks, like, the social skills are incredibly important because of how diversified our industry is, IT, cybersecurity. And again, I think that we're more diversified because of the cybersecurity is worldwide, right? So we have to be able to communicate effectively with a very, very diverse, wide range of individuals.
Well, and as being a woman in cyber, you know, there's all kinds of things that I'm sure that you've had to deal with, from just simple things. I had, when I took on the board position with WeCs, I had two of my board members on the show with me. One was probably more my age, and then the other one is younger. You know, she's I think an auditor or something, but for a really great company. But she's still in that, you know, maybe 20 generation. And we were just talking about how hard it is, just simple things. Like, and I look at this at my events. I look at it when people are registering. I'll have guys that'll say, hey, can I bring my buddy that works with me? You know, usually there might be one female on a team. And, you know, I'm like, well, what happens when they go to lunch? You know, all the guys go together and then you got, you know, are you bringing, you know, just simple things like that. Did you, how hard was that? And I was in the military, so I work primarily with men, so I can totally relate to how it is being the only female with all men. How challenging was that for you to, you rose above it, look where you are now, but how, what were some of your difficulties like as you were growing your career?
Sure. And I, you know, I started off by saying that I think we've come a long way. We still have ways to come to elevate, you know, women in cyber, minorities in cyber, and women of color in cyber. I think the last stat I saw was like 11% of women are in cybersecurity, and that's just women, period, right? So women, it starts dwindling when we're talking about women of color, minority women, and also when we're looking at stats of women in leadership positions like CISO positions or directors of cyber, those positions for anybody that, you know, that pool starts shrinking, right? So there's one time I've been super, super blessed to have, I say, grow my career. I grew up in the Baltimore area with my career. So Baltimore is very diverse. Shout out to B-More. And it was just, I worked in a very diverse area. So I saw people of color that were directors and leads and managers. But that's not the way it is across the country. So that kind of goes back to that regional emotional intelligence and awareness, because it's not like that everywhere as far as who's at a leadership position. So I was fortunate enough to be in an environment early on where I saw that. But to that point, it was still few and far between when we're looking at women in higher positions such as a CISO. But yeah, I was fortunate. My CISO at CMS, I had a woman CISO and a director. Our director was a woman as well. So that's why I think it's really important that we continue to share our stories as women and minorities in cyber. And I'm in this, I run the, I'm on the board for Blacks in Cyber Mentorship, and it's a great program because, like, just seeing all the fantastic minds of the next generation of cyber, and I teach at Penn State, and it's just so exciting to see the next generation workforce. I'm very confident that that's going to change. But I had one situation in my career when I was at the federal government where I had somebody in leadership. I truly felt dismissed, as in what I had to say did not matter at all. Like, I just felt like it was, you know, it was more like chatter. They weren't listening to me, and it was a gentleman. And that was like, that has stuck with me. And I remember walking out the office, like, that person did not hear a word I said, which was a situation that, somebody was basically trying to go over me, and I was like explaining how, you know, we needed to do it the way that it was originally laid out, blah, blah, blah. So I just remember leaving. I was like, well, I'm going to do what I need to do. And I just kept it moving. And I think that was kind of my MO. I probably experienced that a lot more, but I just, in my head, I was like, whatever, I got to keep going. And I credit that to just who I am as a person, but I realize not everybody's like me. That's my self-awareness. Not everybody's like me or like that, approaches situations like that. And it is tough. It is very tough to compete, especially being a mother, a sister, a daughter, you know, all of the things that we're expected to be, plus a career woman. It can be daunting and very heavy for us to juggle everything. And some of us have great support, some don't. But I hesitate to even talk like that now because it's so different. There's like, you know, women, just because you're a woman doesn't mean you have kids and get married and do all this. Like, the times are not the times they were before. And I think that's awesome. You know, the fact that we have that, that range when we're talking about these things, but still, we are still, per statistics, you know, there's less of us in this field and less of us in leadership. So you know, I always just, my motto is better to ask for forgiveness than permission a lot of times. Don't let anybody steal your joy. Keep moving and trust the universe, you know, and you know, law of attraction is real. And if that's what you want to do, like, there's nobody that can stop you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. You know, I think the law of attraction and karma and all of that, you know, was so true. But, you know, it took people like you. And like, for instance, there's a, I don't know if she's still the CISO over at Eli Lilly. She's a VP and you may know her, but she was on our show and it took people talking about the things that they had to go through to get to where we are now. You know, she was a very high up executive. I think she's still out there. She talks about diversity a lot. And there's another CISO and they just told me their stories and they told it to me on our shows that, you know, like she came in, you know, because she was of color, you know, they immediately thought that she was the secretary there to take notes, you know, and she's like, no, I'm the representative, you know, I'm the C-level person here for the meeting. So I think you're right. But maybe everybody has their own story, but it took, you know, leaders like that to talk about the experiences they had to change the way people, you know, communicate with women in cyber. And I know that's not the subject of this, you know, show, but I think it's very important because we have come a long way, but we're still only at 11%. You know, I used to, you know, when I first started doing these type of events, there maybe was one or two females in the audience, you know, now, you know, maybe there's 20% in the audience, if that much. I'd like to see it grow more and more. And that's why I did take on that board position at WeSees, to just help empower women to speak, because it's also very intimidating. That's why I don't get a lot of women keynote speakers, because they're intimidated because they know that their audience is primarily going to be men. And it takes a lot of confidence to stand up there. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, I do what I do, but I'm not a public speaker, like, you know, influencing and educating people. So how long have you been speaking, you know, publicly, and was that challenging for you?
Absolutely. I've been, fun fact, after college, I couldn't find a job. So I became a substitute teacher for the Harrisburg School District. And at the time, you just needed a bachelor's degree to get an emergency substitute teacher license. So I did that and I loved it so much. I ended up getting a long-term substitute teacher gig teaching algebra at the high school in Harrisburg. And it ignited an interest in me I didn't know I had to be an educator. So I went back to school to get my master's in instructional technology. And I always had my goal to teach at a Big Ten school. And happy to say I did meet that goal 2 years ago. I started teaching at the Penn State Harrisburg campus, which has been really great. But I started off just mentoring and teaching some other ad hoc classes and some boot camp programs. And so that was just always my thing. So after I was a couple years in on that, I wanted to start public speaking. And I get so nervous. Listen, I get so nervous before. I think it's the challenge too, because I'm working on my stand up too. So I do this selfishly that I just I want to just challenge myself. But I feel that we have a conversation. There's a conversation to be had. So I really just enjoy like having that conversation. And you can hear most of the talks that I do are that, you know, I ask audience to share their experiences because I don't want to just talk at you. I want to talk with you. And, you know, my whole thing is we're better together. Like I said earlier, you don't know what you don't know. I believe we all have a story to share. And if there's one person I can recruit or support in their cyber career out of 200, 300, 500, doesn't matter. I feel that, you know, my job has been done. So I'm really passionate about that. And it's a great feeling to know that I have helped somebody, especially when I'm talking about my students or the mentorship program. So I've been speaking for a few years now, and that was actually, FurgeCon was my, actually, that was my first keynote for a cyber conference. I don't know if I told anybody that, but it was.
Well, you did amazing. It was great. So
thank you.
And, you know, and it's, and I'm so impressed by like you and, you know, the women that sit on the board with me, because they're not just doing their jobs. They're doing what you're doing. They're teachers, they're volunteering. And I'm like, geez, you know, I mean, it's amazing. Like all the work that, you know, my peers in the industry are doing. I think it's very important too for the younger women coming up to know that it is important to volunteer. I mean, I've always volunteered on, it was important for me to find another board to sit on. It just fell in my lap that it happened to be WESI's, because that's so perfect, because that's such my passion. But I think it's very important that you give back and help others. So, I mean, kudos to you for everything that you're doing and, you know, where you've come. I mean, that you thought you were going to be a school teacher, and now look where you are. You know, you're ruling the world. You're ruling Philly.
So I would say all that. I'm trying. I'm trying my best. We're doing our best.
What's next? What's, you know, we're down to about 4 minutes left of the show. I told you it would go fast. But what's on your bucket list? Like, you've achieved so much. Where do you go from here?
Yeah, I definitely want to get to the next level of being a CISO and, you know, continue to give back. And I am a co-organizer for B-Sides Harrisburg, and I'm working with B-Sides Philly. So our cyber community is so amazing. So I just want to continue to be a productive, valuable member there. Would love to, I'm looking to get some publications out, move from emerging leader to trailblazer. That's my goal, to, you know, leave this world and the cyberspace better than it was, and do all I can to, again, uplift the next gen through mentorship and opportunities. But yeah, I'm focused on, you know, continuing to make a difference, continuing to lift up folks, and get into the next level of my career and some more stuff. But, you know, that'll be a surprise, Kim. We can talk about that maybe in a couple years. You can have me. No, we don't got to wait that long, but, you know.
No, I don't want to wait that long. But that's awesome that was your first keynote at a cyber event, you know, and no one would have known otherwise, which is just amazing, because that takes a lot of courage. And actually, I think that you reached out to me. You reached out to us,
which I
love. It's so hard. I'm like trying to fill these events. So anytime I get, like, it's like a freebie to me when, you know, I get a CISO that reaches out to me that wants to be our speaker. I'm like, yes, please. Thank you. And on top of it, it's a female, you know, because I get a lot of harassment from people if I don't have a female speaker either on the panel or the keynote. I'm like, I'm trying. Trust me, I'm trying. So it's such a huge perk when that happens. So any of your peers or friends that are females, please send them my way, because I'm always like, and that's the other thing is, you know, if you're too intimidated to go up there by yourself, bring one of your peers. There's fireside chats we can do. There's all kinds of things. You don't have to stand on a stage alone. But Jessica, it has been like a true honor to have you on the show. I know you were a little frazzled because that's you, which is a bummer. I hope you get to enjoy some of the long weekend. And I know, you know, your job is a demanding job and you don't get many days off. So I hope you get to have some time. But thank you so much for spending the last hour with us. Is there any parting words that you would like to leave our listeners?
Sure. Just, you know, believe in yourself. Imposter syndrome is real, but feel it for a second and keep it moving.
Well, Jessica Hoffman, she's the Deputy CISO of the City of Philly. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of And Security for All. I hope you all can take some time, spend some time with your family, yourself, and as we talked about emotional intelligence, just kind of check in yourself and try to relax this weekend and enjoy the long weekend if you're privileged to have a long weekend. If not, just enjoy where you are. We will be back next week. So thanks, everyone. Have a fabulous weekend. Stay safe, stay secure, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for tuning into And Security for All. Be sure to join your host, Kim Hakim, for another episode of the show next Friday at noon Pacific time and 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. And don't forget, you can follow Kim on LinkedIn by searching for Kim Hakim. That's Kim, H-A-K-I-M, to keep yourself posted on all of her upcoming cybersecurity events. Are you a cybersecurity professional that needs to earn continuing educational hours? FutureCon Events brings high-level cybersecurity training, discovering cutting-edge security approaches, managing risk in the ever-changing threat of the cybersecurity workforce. Cybersecurity is no longer just an IT problem. To learn more about attending a virtual event, go to FutureConEvents.com or email info@FutureConEvents.com. Or follow us on LinkedIn or Twitter at FutureConHQ. Don't miss the weekly FutureCon Seamless podcast series, focusing on the insights and thoughts of chief security officers and industry pioneers making a difference throughout the world. Kim Hakim, CEO of FutureCon Events, and Darren Anderson, CEO and co-founder Next Robotics, host Seamless Podcast, started by a team of entrepreneurs with experience in fields like smart cities, technology, cybersecurity. The result is a series of podcasts unlike anything you've ever heard anywhere. Listen where you get your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher.